are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 29th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Hey. Sorry, I got a little Jeb Bushy there. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. And what a perfect coincidence, because who better to recap last night's debate amongst the Republicans and amongst the guy who wasn't there than our every Friday guest, when we're lucky, Cliff Schechter. Also on the program today to ostensibly give me a movie recommendation that I may get to sometime in 2016. The great Isabel Gillies will join us. Meanwhile, U.S. economy slows in the fourth quarter of 2015. The Zika virus speeds up. Fear spreads across, really, arguably our hemisphere. We will cover the debate last night. We will cover what's happening in the Democratic race as we are, well, I guess one business day away from the Iowa caucuses, 3 days away. In Flint, despite the fact that the state said the water was potable, you could shower in it, don't worry about it, they shipped in bottled water for state employees in Flint a year before it became a problem or was public. Meanwhile, the Obama administration will require large companies to show pay equity or pay rates across race and gender. All that and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, as you may or may not know, now members, we tried to cover the Trump event. Now, I am usually the second or third person to admit when I am wrong. And so, but let me jump out ahead and say, last night I thought that Donald Trump would hit the stage at about 5 of. In his supposed Wounded Warriors event. And that would seriously undercut the debate's ratings. Now, he didn't do that. And as we were watching, we're just sitting there looking at a blank stage. We turned over to the Republican debate, the Trumpless debate, if you will. And we didn't follow the Trump rally. But we did spend a lot of time talking about the race in that, and we'll probably release that to members. We'll release both to members, and maybe we'll do one for freebies.
Should we do them together, or do you want them separate?
I think we should do them separate, because they're different things. I mean, somebody wants to watch a debate and they don't want to hear us blab for 45 minutes, then you want to be able to do that.
But they're both great.
They're both great.
They're both.
They're both great. I got to say, like, you just track Michael through this campaign, where it's like constant Ben Carson, and then all of a sudden, just like he's been infected with Trump.
Oh, I think they're both great.
And you can't
both of my impressions.
You can't have a normal conversation with Michael in this office anymore.
No. That's true.
I mean, I don't want to imply you could ever have a normal conversation with him, but now it's just
Sam Seed is a loser. He's resentful because he can't do impressions. He did the George W. Bush impression, which is completely out of date and frankly overrated to begin with. And now he's lashing out at me because he's sad because of his lack of talent. It's very sad. It's too bad.
This is basically what's happening around the office right now. And it's a little bit difficult. And it's going to get worse, I have a feeling, because I don't think Trump is going to go away. But we will talk about all of this with Cliff Schechter. Just a reminder, and we've done too much material this week. I mean, we're getting literally getting complaints from members saying, you put out too much content. We got a lot of compliments on yesterday's show from members saying that was hilarious. Sometimes we get into a groove and the whole show ends up being hilarious. And frankly, in the context of what's going on in the Republican Party, it's hard. There's a lot of soft targets out there, let's say. But we're putting out way too much content. We cannot help ourselves. It just gives you more opportunity to choose. You have to listen to all of it. So become a member today. Support the program, and then you get to choose. When you become a member of the program, when you support this, it's like you're actually becoming a member of like four different shows. We put out so much content. All of it's sort of uniquely different. So join the Majority Report today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. And you can also support this program by buying your coffee from justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off. It's a win-win-win type of situation. 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. It's all fair trade. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. If you don't buy it through Amazon and you prefer to buy it through jet.com, which is a new service, then buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Check out Jet. You should definitely check it out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. Back, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. There are songs that I haven't heard in a long time, and I start to think like maybe I should just give it another 10, 15, 20 seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, today is Casual Friday, and as is the case on every Casual Friday, that we are lucky we have the opportunity to play this theme song.
Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce to someone who needs no introduction that isn't sung, Cliff Schachter. Hello, Cliff.
How are you, Sam?
I am tired, Cliff.
I hear that.
Yeah, no, I'm tired.
That from you.
I'm tired. It started, the week started off with my wife was out of town. My son was sick. He did not let me sleep more than 20 minutes at a click. She came back into town, and then we did the debate last night till 11:30 or 12, I think we got out of here, and I had to get back around here to record something for Ring of Fire early in the morning. It's just been, but I'm elated. I'm the energy of the primary is really just, it's pulsating through me.
The energy on the Republican side, I assume, right?
Yeah, I mean,
happy, go lucky, optimistic kind of energy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we only heard the word Armageddon four times last night. And so that is, we've got that going for us.
We do have that, yes.
All right.
Among other things that we heard, all of which were awesome.
Let's talk about this debate because it was obviously, I mean, I think everybody knows the story. Trump didn't attend. Yeah, just give me your sense of the idea of Trump not attending the debate and everything that led up to that. I mean, you know, we now have the sort of the I guess the benefit of hindsight, but give me your sense of just that part of the dynamic.
That part of the, I mean, that sort of you know, and there's something always surreal sort of comes along with Trump where things happen in political races that don't tend to happen. That happens in this political race that don't tend to happen in other ones. And, you know, I mean, whether he did that, whether it was all a planned thing, which some people think just to get all of the attention, which he certainly did. I mean, he got attention before, you know, the media was paying attention to him before the debate. And even during debate, of course, he was talked about a lot. Or he just got angry because he's not somebody who can take, you know, no for an answer. He doesn't want Megyn Kelly there. He's got whatever this sort of thing is, this hatred for Megyn Kelly. And you know, Roger Iles is almost the same kind of guy as him. They, neither of them would give in. So, I mean, it created this whole sort of ridiculous situation in a number of ways. And of course, it totally ruined Ted Cruz's night because essentially nobody likes him anyhow. And if Trump's not there, you're going to go after whoever the guy is who's leading on the stage, which ends up being Cruz in that situation. This guy's the front runner, and in a sense, he was able to protect himself from having them all come after him. So, yeah. I mean, it was actually a really smart move if we're not looking at anything, you know, behaving in an honorable way at all anymore.
as
mattering.
A couple of things strike me. When you say it was surreal, Matt last night said that we were watching what was her name again? What's somebody on CNN? This report, Erin. What's her face?
Erin Burnett.
Yes, Erin Burnett, and she was like talking about how Trump's plane was landing, and he said, you know, when all of this just sort of seems like you're watching a movie, and they have that montage of reporters and anchors playing themselves in some type of fictional movie, so that it's
right.
Like, you know, the aliens have landed in Moscow and in London and Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, President Trump's plane is landing in San Francisco and he'll address
right.
the crowds. And there was that quality to it. But I will say this, and you know, I've said this a couple of times, but let me just wrap it up on a Friday. I think it was incredibly inappropriate for a news organization. Now, of course, you and I, we don't have any respect for Fox News. But
right.
other media organizations have spoken out when Fox, for instance, was put in the back of the room in the Washington press pool. I don't understand how they got a pass from the conventional wisdom from the other media outlets when they wrote a parody press release about someone. Yes, he's a buffoon, but the fact is he leads the Republican Party in terms of polling. they write a parody and mock this guy who they're supposedly going to moderate a debate about. I mean, the idea that they're getting a pass over this from, you know, fine, they're not a news organization. I'm completely sold on that. The idea, though, is if they're not a news organization, they're not a news organization.
The big deal, right, is that they get away with everybody giving them a pass because everybody sort of knows they're not a news organization, but they still get all the benefits of...
Right, yeah, where's my press pass? I want to sit in the press pool. How's that at the White House? But all right, so putting that aside...
Everybody talks about, I mean, essentially, and I think we've talked about it before, just... quickly, essentially the genius behind Fox, if you want to call it that, you know, which is, again, reminds you of what Trump's doing now. Fox did to news what Trump is doing to presidential campaigns, which is basically took advantage of the fact that people respected certain sort of unwritten codes and traditions and behaved in a certain way. And Fox came in and said, we're not going to do any of that. We don't care. We're not a public good. We're going to behave more like a political campaign. We're going to have a PR unit that's going to attack anybody like they did with Trump here that we don't like, that disagrees with us. You know, we're going to go after people for when we have personal agendas. We're going to cater to our base, you know, so to speak, and solidify that. I mean, really, everything they've done has been more like a political campaign. So they still behave that way, and they completely get away with it. So it's I mean, you're right about that, is that they have no ground to stand on here in what they did.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not saying I feel
sorry for Trump, right. But, you know.
Right. I don't care about Trump either, but I just shocking to me that, like, you know, the idea. I mean, can you imagine that when Bernie Sanders dragged his feet about the MSNBC debate, if Phil Griffin put out a document, or, you know, MSNBC wrote a document mocking Hillary Clinton, for that matter? I mean, it would be outrageous. It would be outrageous.
Right.
All right. So leaving that aside, I think, you know, basically, I think Trump, the reason why I didn't show up, I don't think it was calculated per se. I think this is just this guy's personality. He's like, you're going to mock me. It's going to be public. I need to show that you're not going to win. And he went on stage, and that's what he said to these people out there. He said, you got to show people that when your rights are trampled, that you're going to stand up. And that's basically, it's showing that he has it's like him sitting at a deal. Look,
he refuses to lose in any situation, which shows you that the kinds of things, like when you're dealing with foreign policy, for example, these kinds of things, where sometimes you just have to do stuff, you know, because it's what you have to do to prevent a war or to prevent people from dying or prevent whatever it might be. So, you know, for him, everything is sort of, you know, like the rest of his behavior, he's like a child. So it's sort of like,
but, with that said,
Iran gave us three guys and we gave them seven. You know, they win.
But
seven versus three or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
I hate to be in a position of defending Trump, but let's face it. This is a situation where the guy's sitting at a table. He's offered a deal. I mean, and he says, I can afford to walk away from this. And so he does. And frankly, he won. He won.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think his calculus is sort of rather narrow. I mean, it's just, he's just waging a marketing campaign rather than a sort of like a multilateral negotiation about the future of various peoples. So it's not that difficult of an equation.
There's other things in that too, though. Like the way he's gone after anybody who he thinks is using him in any way, his, you know, brand or whatever to profit. Like he mentioned a number of times, you know, of course, how much money Fox was going to make, and now they make less money. And that's a part of it, too, that they're using me to, you know, and then we find out he asked them for like $5 million or whatever, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, for his charity, supposedly.
For his charity.
Which also
still,
makes
he's
sense.
He's demanding money because he needs value for the fact that they're grabbing his value and profiting from it. You know,
I think it's also that he couldn't, he didn't want to show up at that debate. I think at one point he realized, like, this is a twofer for me. One, I get to show that I'm not going to back down to these people. And two, I don't have to debate going into Iowa, and I'm going to show everybody the power of me just even when I'm not there. I mean, so let's pivot to that debate, because it was a situation where it's like the abusive dad is gone. And so everybody, like,
all the children came out from hiding underneath the table.
Yeah, it's like Lord of the Flies now, you know, for like 10 minutes. And even like Chris Wallace was trying to be tough. And it was hilarious. It was hilarious. Yeah. I want to play this clip because let's start here because I thought this was stunning to me. You know, because I think there was a sense of like, if there's no Trump, right, they're all going to have a chance to shine. And I think Jeb Bush, I think he's been permanently scarred. I mean, this guy throughout the debate, you know, it's like one thing he starts it off. We'll play a clip of him starting off, you know, mentioning Bush. But he did it throughout the debate. And there were times where he actually did a self-effacing joke that he attributed to Trump, as if like he's saying, like, I know Trump's not here to make fun of me and mock me and belittle me, so let me just step in as a surrogate for him. listen to what he says at the beginning of the debate. This is, he misses Trump.
Thank you. Governor Bush, it's hard for anyone with your pedigree to avoid being called establishment. But isn't that part of the problem in this race, that three others on this stage are splitting the mainstream Republican vote and thereby possibly handing this nomination over to an anti-establishment candidate?
Brett, we're just starting. The first vote hasn't been counted. Why don't we let the process work? I trust Iowans, Granite Staters, people in South Carolina, people in Nevada to start this process out. I kind of miss Donald Trump. He was a little teddy bear to me. We always had such a loving relationship during these debates and in between and the tweets. I kind of miss him. I wish he was here. Everybody else was in the witness protection program when I went after him on behalf of what the Republican cause should be. Conservative principles, believing in limited government, believing in accountability, leading by fixing the things that are broken. Look, I'm an establishment because my dad, the greatest man alive, was president of the United States, and my brother, who I adore as well, is a fantastic brother, was president. Fine, I'll take it. And I guess I'm part of the establishment because Barbara Bush is my mom. I'll take that, too.
It was really bizarre. It was so fanciful that he took Trump on. I mean, Kasich ran ads calling Trump Hitler, more or less. And then the whole part about my dad's the greatest man alive, like...
Awesome about that.
Yeah, you know,
it was like, my dad's the greatest man alive. My brother, I adore him.
You know, I mean,
you can't call his brother great. Even he realizes that.
Right.
Like, my brother, yeah, he's a decent guy too. And it's sort of like the obsession with Trump is such that like they're all thrown off, and almost as to what to do when Trump's not there. And in a way, it is kind of. I think you're right. I think Jeb is permanently scarred. It feels like that. Like the abusive dad is gone. He almost like he's liberated. So now he's like got diarrhea of the mouth because he can just talk in a way that he normally can't when Donald Trump is there. I mean, it's
someone tweeted us last night and said it's like on The Sopranos when Tony Soprano's not around. And all the other guys are sitting around going, Tony's squeezing me on my my warehouse deal. And somebody's saying, like, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do about it? But I'll tell you right now, if he was here right now, I'd be right in his face. Oh, hey, Tony, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Can I get you a coffee? Can I get you a coffee? Hey. I mean, it's really...
It is fun to watch. I mean, because these guys are just... They're I don't know what else to say, man. They're pathetic. All of them. Rand Paul's another one. I mean, it's like they suddenly are so much tougher when Donald's not there. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I want to play this clip of Jeb Bush. I mean, just to carry out this theme and exhaust it, if we could... that Jeb has been permanently scarred by Donald Trump. And I think it is the case. Like, you know, maybe there was something in his dynamic with his brother at home or something that Jeb was like the whipping boy. But Jeb seems now completely ruined inside himself. Here he is with Major Garrett of CBS. And this is just... sort of jaw-dropping. Here he is. Well, let's just play this and tell me if this sounds like the guy that you even, I don't know if I would trust this guy to be like a Cub Scout leader at this point. I'm a little bit concerned if he, you know, what happens if he can handle, like, you know, we could, this camping trip could be rained out. I don't know what to do. Here, listen.
Jeb Bush running in the back of the pack here still clings to hope.
Can Jeb Bush be a surprise story here on caucus night?
Yes, since the expectations are so low.
Well, you have succeeded there, Governor.
Mission accomplished.
The guy says to him, he says, expectations. And you understand.
You've been so pathetic. That, I mean, that's really saying that even if one person votes for you, you could do great. That's right.
No, now he says, he raises his arms up in the air, Cliff, and he says, mission accomplished.
I was about to say, then he repeats the phrase that literally may be the phrase that defines the disaster of his brother's presidency.
All he could have said more than that would have been like an unironic, good job. What is it? Yeah, great job, Jebby. Yeah.
Right.
Heck of a job,
Jebby. Reporters, like, maybe somebody stood up among the reporters and threw a shoe at him.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah, but this is like him. This is like him taking off his shoe and banging himself on the head with it.
And he would not be able to duck as fast as George. Let's be real.
He doesn't have George W.'s cat like instincts. Clearly.
All right. So let's go through this. Let's go through some of the people here. What? How did you think Ted Cruz did in this debate?
I mean, it's so hard for me to even judge, because, you know, the fact that these people like this sort of unctuous, like, he's just like this sleazy used car salesman. And it's quite clear, I mean, the fake, you know, earnestness that comes from him. I mean, I think it was not good overall for him, but again, it's sort of, sometimes I don't feel like I can put myself in the head of, and maybe that's a good thing, some of these people that are watching this and actually buy into Ted Cruz at all. But no, I mean, I felt it actually went better in a way for Jeb and Rand and a couple of those guys, because they did seem like they were more sort of free and had a better night, you know? I mean, but there's nothing that sticks out in my mind that Ted Cruz did that would make you say he's going to arrest sort of his decline and take voters away from Trump. I don't know if that struck you the same way.
He seemed completely unprepared for the notion that they would be coming after him in some way, which I think was fairly obvious. I mean, he may have thought, like, oh, he's going to stand, he's going to watch Jeb and Rubio go at it, or Christie and Jeb or whatnot. But here's Ted Cruz complaining. And I think this is the worst moment he had in the debate, because you got to remember, for supporters of, well, basically for the Republican Party, I mean, this is why Trump does so well. There's a certain amount they need to see. There's a huge sort of authoritarian strain running through this party. They need to see a guy, and I mean a guy, dispatch the other, his opponents, and show no weakness. You can show aggrievement, but Trump can't. I mean, Cruz can't get to aggrievement that sort of everybody can sort of share. It's almost too personal for him. Here he is. Here's number 8.
Note that the last 4 questions have been, Rand, please attack Ted. Marco, please attack Ted. Chris, please attack Ted. Jeb, please attack Ted. Let me just say this.
It is a debate, sir.
Well, no. A debate actually is a policy issue. But I will say this. Gosh, if you guys ask one more mean question, I may have to leave the stage. Chris, the most important determination any voter is going to make in this election is who's best prepared to be commander-in-chief, who has the experience, who has the knowledge, who has the judgment, who has the clarity of vision and strength of resolve to keep this country safe. That is what this debate is all about, and I would suggest let's stay focused on those issues rather than just attacks directed at each other.
I think the questions were about issues, but Senator Rubio,
I was mentioned,
what would you like to say?
Yes, sir. Senator Cruz, I'd like to respond. Do I go? Let me go first, and then you can please recognize Rand after. But first of all,
thank you. There you go.
The silliness. But, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, what is Cruz trying to achieve here? All he does is complain. What he should, what, you know, what Trump would have done in this situation is like, I noticed that you have everybody attacking me. And frankly, I have no problem with it. I don't blame you because I'm the leader. And, you know, I'm the guy everybody's going after. He could have communicated the same thing without it being, you know, like, can we please not do this anymore? Like, as if they're going to listen to him.
Right. I mean, I don't understand how that's appealing to anyone, no matter what your politics are. I mean, he kind of just whined, you know, was whining his way through the whole thing. And again, like, you know, this is an alternate universe. I guess on some level, I have to believe that some of these guys know that they're acting. And I really believe that Ted Cruz is fake. And even if he believes some crazy things, has to understand that he's refusing to answer, in many cases, what are key policy issues, or give any, you know, answer to them whatsoever, because there's just things, there's so many things you're not allowed to do in the Republican Party. So at this point, whether it's a, you know, if it, you can't, you're not allowed to solve immigration, you're not allowed to raise taxes for anything, and shockingly, doing stuff in government actually costs money. You're not allowed to have any solution to climate change. It doesn't exist. You're not allowed to have any solution to gun violence. That's a natural act of God we can't do anything about. I mean, they're just so, I mean, this guy who's crying and saying, you know, we have a policy debate, they never have a policy debate because they're all locked, you know, they're all in Al Gore's lockbox and can't say anything and can't give common sense and you know, pragmatic answers to what clearly are problems. And the one time that Ted Cruz did that, you know, when it came to immigration, where he actually moved away from his so-called position and was in favor of some path to legality, now he denies it ever happened and tries to, you know, feed people a load of bull about, you know, he's playing some, you know, 12-dimensional chess to bring that back, or was it 14-dimensional chess? And that's clearly not what was going on. So it's even more laughable hearing him say that. Let's keep this to policy issues, like how we're never going to raise taxes on anybody. And, you know, I mean, it's just stupid.
Well, to be fair, I think they did discuss policy insofar as they will or will not say radical Islamic jihad or something like that, right? Isn't that the big policy issue? If you say those magic words?
Marco Rubio said, obviously ISIS is the kind of challenge that we've never seen them before in the history of the world.
Marco Rubio said, you know, this is the thing, is that the thing about Rubio, why I don't think he's ever going to have any success beyond where he is because he can't even get attention when he says some of the most bat crap crazy things in the world. I mean, the things he's saying that are coming out of his mouth, wait a second, I got a list of a couple of quotes of his here. He said that about ISIS. He said, ISIS, he may not remember what happened on 9/11, but he said that ISIS is the most dangerous jihadist group in the history of mankind. He said that he used the word apocalyptic, excuse me, five times. Five times apocalyptic. He said that the sitting president has been habitually violating the Constitution. I mean, he goes on and says he's just back crap crazy things, and nobody even pays attention to him because he's so. I just don't know if people are not taking him seriously or what. And here's where Rubio. I think it was fascinating what Rubio did, what Jeb did to Rubio on immigration, because Jeb basically said, "Look, I'm going to lose X amount of votes in this campaign because of immigration. So I'm thinking what I'm going to do is I'm going to tie this anvil around my waist and I'm going to hand it off to you, Marco. Good luck." And this is basically, I'm going down, but you're going down with me. Here is Jeb on Rubio retreating from immigration reform.
Governor Bush, do you agree that Senator Rubio has not reversed himself on his immigration promise?
Well, I'm kind of confused because he was the sponsor of the Gang of Eight bill that did require a bunch of thresholds, but it ultimately allowed for citizenship over an extended period of time. I mean, that's a fact. And he asked me to support that. And I supported him because I think people, when you're elected, you need to do things. And he led the charge to finally fix this immigration problem that has existed now for, as Marco says, for 30 years. And then he cut and run because it wasn't popular amongst conservatives, I guess. Here's what I believe. And I wrote a book about this called Immigration Wars. You can get it at $2.99 on Amazon. It's not a bestseller, I can promise you.
I'm a loser. Just want to add that.
You can get it.
Trump's not here.
It's affordable for everybody. We should have a path to legal status for the 12 million people that are here illegally.
And so there you have it. I mean, he reiterates his position, which is, you know, in the Republican Party, is, you know, at least part of the reason why he's not going to go anywhere. But he also wants to make sure he's taking Rubio down, too. I mean, it's what's really fascinating about this race. There seems to be so much personal animosity on that stage that goes in like 14 different directions.
Right. Well, there's so much. That's the thing. That's like there's, I don't know if I'm making up a word, like sub drama, like below the bigger drama of them arguing over these issues is the fact that you know, Jeb was like a mentor to Rubio. And, you know, he stuck with Rubio when Rubio took on Charlie Crist in 2010 and chased Crist from the Republican Party, essentially. That should have been a sign, however, to potentially to Jeb, being that Crist was sort of the, you know, one of the senior Republicans at the time. And Rubio didn't sit around and wait for him. He decided, you know what, when Crist was going to do it, I'm getting in this race anyhow. And, you know, that's essentially what he's done here to Jeb. And clearly there's lots of personal animosity because of that, because he, you know, he views it as Bush family members often do, that you know, it's their right and their privilege to be doing this. And Rubio wouldn't even be there if it weren't for him. So how dare he? You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Indeed. And I don't know. It was fascinating to see Rubio really go nowhere. I mean, this was sort of the big myth. I mean, the interesting part to me last night was that I thought Rand Paul had the best night of anybody. It's not going to mean anything in that race.
Right.
And I think he was sort of freed up, and that's why he could deliver it. And I personally appreciate, you know, what he had to say in terms of mass incarceration. I mean, he was very strong on Ferguson. But what was amazing to me was how cowardly, I mean, how you can so clearly see the agenda of Fox News. They present that question, good for them. They get credit for having that question being asked at a Republican debate, which was very far afield from any other question, you know, that we've seen in past debates. But they give it to Rand Paul, the sort of like sequestered guy who they know is not going to be a challenge to Jeb Bush. That question should have been asked of just about everybody else on stage.
That's right.
That's where
they
the
give it to the so-called libertarian guy who's already spoken out on this.
Yes.
And actually has sponsored bills similar to that. I don't know if he's... So, I mean, you're right. They made sure that he... It's almost like you play your appointed role.
Yes.
And speak about this issue, and then we'll move back to the guys that can actually win in speaking about more crazy right-wing things.
And we won't ask them. We won't challenge them on ground they don't feel comfortable with. I mean, this reminds me of the one time we heard the words TPP at a Republican debate when I think, you know, Trump was asked the question, and he said, yeah, I don't like the trade deals, and he sort of sloughed it off. But they did not ask the question of the three people on stage who are going to have to vote for the TPP.
That's right.
I mean, that is a calculation. You have to be... Even the law of averages.
And switch their positions back and forth
exactly.
on it. I mean, Ted Cruz has been all over the place on that, as has Rand Paul.
They don't want that to come up. They don't want to come up because that's a contentious issue within the Republican Party. I mean, it's sort of fascinating to watch how Fox does that in that situation.
Yeah. And sort of a little sort of extra nugget for people who may not know what's going on, just because it's interesting with Rand Paul. I happen to live north of his state. And so we get some of their media, and he's being basically called by everybody there to get out of the presidential race. Republicans there at this point are pretty angry at him. You know, they switched their whole process, you know, in picking someone for the presidential race just so that he could, you know, sneak away and you know, get away with sort of sneakily staying in the Senate race and the presidential race at the same time. So he's up for re-election. And the thing is that one of the best Democratic candidates you could have just got into the race. A guy named Jim Gray, who's the mayor of Lexington and is a self-made multi-gazillionaire and willing to spend his money on running in Kentucky. So Kentucky obviously is a lean, very much a lean Republican state. but in a presidential year, it's a little better for
right.
the blue team. And you've got this guy whose numbers are tanking in Kentucky because people there feel like he's not doesn't give a crap about being a senator, which he doesn't. He wants to be president. And so the calls are getting louder and louder attacking him and saying, get the hell out of the presidential race. So that's kind of an interesting subtext to all this, too, just because he had a great night, and maybe he'll now, you know, as you said, he's not going to change the presidential race one bit, but will he now use that as an excuse to try to stay in the presidential race even longer? I don't know.
And I got the sense that he was doing work for the party insofar as, like, I'm going to strip Rubio of whatever percentage points of his support is coming from anybody sort of lean libertarian. I'm going to be the guy who's going to take that away from him. And he's obviously the best suited. And because, you know, from the party's perspective, they don't need Cruz to have 2 percentage points. They just want to keep him, sort of capped at around 10 or 12 percentage points. Right. And
right.
So, he's now showing that he could be of that Rand could be of service. And of course, you also want to build the email list so that you can send out, people who work for you.
Biblical cures to cancer.
Right.
And,
exactly.
Shit like that to get yourself so you can just keep making money off the rubes.
All right. So we got a couple of minutes here. Let's talk about the Democratic race. Your take on the kerfuffle of involving the Democratic debates over the past week.
The Hillary team calling for another debate, you mean?
Well, just so the people know, what happened was we had MSNBC and the Concord Ledger, I think it is in New Hampshire, decided to set up a debate. Now, I don't think they did this without some indication that the Clinton party campaign, but that's just speculation on my part. So you can
right.
even forget I said that. But they set up a debate. The Clinton campaign said, we're interested. And, and now that we're interested, the DNC can sanction it. That's literally
right.
a quote from the campaign spokesman. And Bernie Sanders, who has been in favor of more debates, basically said, we got to wait and see if the DNC sanctions it. And then they came out with a statement that said, okay, we'll agree to do the New Hampshire debate if the Clinton campaign agrees to do 3 more debates after that, or 4 more debates after that in March, April, May.
Right.
And
now, is everybody, right. What does that, what does that tell you? Obviously, Sanders is going to want more debates when the schedule goes to a place that favors Hillary a little bit more.
Yep.
Right? When you're going southern states, there's a larger body of minority voters who so far have been much more supportive of Hillary. But we're going to tell you that right now, Sanders is pretty cool with things, and Hillary's like, yes, more debates.
Right.
It tells you that they see his momentum. They see the fact that he's catching, caught, or passed her, depending upon what polls you look at. And, and it just, again, what it reminds me of is how basically Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been like one of the worst party chairs ever in so many ways. The fact of having her as a party chair, somebody who is terrible on, and opposed our move towards Cuba, and opposes medicinal marijuana. So many ways Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it's always follow the money. And picking her, and so she rigged this whole thing and had these debates, on weekend nights when fewer people were watching, when football games were on, to help the part to help the person they couldn't come out and endorse, but the party clearly supports, which is Hillary Clinton.
Right.
It's incredibly stupid, and it was a stupid strategy to begin with.
Yep.
Because it you're trying to make it like there is an insider somewhere, which is just dumb in this election to even want yourself to for Hillary's people to want to be the insiders. But it's dumb in general because, we are a democracy, and getting people out there and having them talk about their ideas is always a good thing. And in the end, all it does is it hurts the Democratic Party long term, because this is a time where you can get tons of free media no matter who the nominee ends up being. It's just, it's backfired in so
I'd
many
add
ways.
It also does not play into Hillary Clinton's strengths at all. She, time is borne it out, but the fact is that she doesn't get hurt when she debates. She can debate. She's a good debater. She did 40 debates in 2008. It's stupid. They just wanted to protect the lead. They got very defensive and overly cautious.
And this is like the story again and again,
essentially,
of both the Democratic Party, the establishment of the Democratic Party, and the Clintons. Which is, you know, it's sad, really, because, you know, you can, and many, too many other Democrats right now, quite frankly, I'm seeing that with, and because, you know what, losing with 45% is not a good thing. All right, so just protecting your sort of lead and then sort of watching it, it's like these sports teams. You watch a football game where guys are, you know, they're being incredibly cautious when they're only up by 2 points. Well, you know what, then the other team gets the ball back and kicks a field goal. It's stupid, you know, it's somewhat human nature, but you've got to keep, you know, shooting for the stars. You got to keep giving a vision. You got to keep getting out there. And when they start behaving in a cautious way like that, they end up just, people just get sick of it. You know, it's mealy-mouthed. It's not, I mean, there's no clarity, you know, and strength to their positions. And so I just feel like, you know, the DNC has done Hillary no favors and they've done themselves no favors. And now we're in this position because of that.
Am I misremembering, you know, or was 2008 really about, each one of the candidates saying they were going to be the one who fights? I mean, it seems to me that even Obama at one point had to pick up some of that rhetoric. Maybe I'm misremembering, but there was the notion of, you know, being a fighter. And that's, you know, that's the thing is, that's the what's so strange about this, the campaign that the Clintons are running. It seems to me that the Clinton campaign, yep, is that they're playing away from her strengths. I mean, in many ways, they have been running. They have been too. I think they were just way too overconfident about Bernie Sanders. Now, I you know, whether or not they ultimately prevail, I don't know.
That's a lesson you would think they would have learned from 08.
Yes,
you don't go into these things and be overly confident. I don't care if you're running against a frog. You know, I don't care if you're running against one of my cats. Clearly, being overconfident is something that's gotten you in trouble before, so you don't do it again. Where do these people not learn from history ever?
It's
amazing to me.
The strength of Hillary Clinton, it seems to me, that is that she is a fighter, right? Isn't that the thing that is built into why you would want the flip side of, we're tired of the dramas of the Clintons? The flip side of that is they came out ahead, but she's trying to make it like, well, it's my superior ability to reach across the aisle to the Republicans, who every day we're reminded are insane. They're
That's
insane,
right.
And I think that, you know, and I was
more times she could have gotten out there and made the argument against the Republicans that's better for everybody.
Yep. And,
you know, in front of a bigger crowd of people, certainly better for the party overall and for all sane thinking people out there. And it just, when you play that way, I mean, I don't know. I guess I can't really find, you know, I'm going to sort of restate myself over and over again, but I can't sort of, you know, the amount of respect I have for Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not enormous.
Right. But it's also, look, the bottom line is she did it with the Clinton campaign's blessing. I mean, let's not be silly.
Oh, yeah. I'm blaming them too. I'm just saying it's a party chair is, you know, the party chair, if you want your party to win eventually, is to not take sides with people and say what's most important is what's most important for the party, not an
or just
individual
be smart.
Campaign.
I mean, the biggest thing that I find concerning about this whole debate thing is just how incompetent the Clinton campaign has been about this. They were overconfident about it. And here's the thing is that my sense is, and members of this program, forgive me, because I mentioned this on the member show the other day, but I feel like at least in this context, it bears some repeating. It seems to me that Hillary Clinton is running a campaign based on her personal attributes. That being, in this instance, experience, okay? It seems to me that Bernie Sanders is running his campaign based upon a vision for America. Some people may say that it's, you know, pie in the sky, that it's unrealistic and whatnot, but that's what it is. When you say the elevator pitch for Hillary Clinton is she's experienced, she'll be the best president because of her experience. Bernie Sanders, he'll be the best president because he has a notion of where America should go, and then it involves wealth inequality, blah, blah, blah. But the problem is, if Donald Trump is the nominee, and we have no way of knowing, and we're not going to probably, I don't think we'll know until July, frankly, who the Republican nominee is, or I think it's very possible.
Right.
the one thing that he does is destroy his opponent on personal grounds. Like, you know, I mean, he's hurt Jeb by being weak, and then that translates into how he would be as president, by Rubio as being, you know, a boy above his depth, by Cruz as being unlikable, can't make a deal, by, you know, Kasich being low energy, by, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Carson being a liar and maybe a little bit crazy. And when you try and go out there and win on a personal attribute, that's the playing field that you have picked. I don't think Trump has anything where he could attack Bernie Sanders. He could say, you're a socialist, but yeah, I don't think he's got a sentence. I don't think he's got a
hammer and sickle. You're right. They'll go after him on the, they'll try
to, but Trump doesn't have anything in his arsenal to attack somebody on policy. He plays on the personal level because he's a billionaire. All of his personal attributes fit right in with right. his strengths. Now,
that's a good point.
I happen to think that the Democrats are going to win no matter who it is. I just think that that matchup of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I think she does much better against every other Republican because then they're playing on the same playing field, right? Ostensibly, experience, policy, I'm the right temperament, I have the strength that's going to do it. But Trump just basically, Trump just goes out there and basically attacks them as people instead of, the policy. And
it'd be interesting. I think he'd try to turn Bernie Sanders, I mean, I'm just guessing here, into sort of the fact that he's socialist, into sort of the fact that he's weak. I'm not saying it would work. I'm just saying I think that that's where he ends up going, and perhaps he even plays around with a little, you know, sort of a little sort of anti-Semitism latently. You know,
perhaps. Although his wife, his daughter's married to a Jew. His daughter's married to a Jew. He's basically already said publicly that it makes it tougher.
And he has New York values that makes it tougher on him.
It's an interesting matchup there because
it is. I give you that. That's a great point. I don't, you know, because I'm trying to think about what he would try to do. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he, you know, maybe he tries to make
Trump is big time into Jews, is my understanding. Big time.
What'd you say?
He's big time into Jews.
Oh,
he loves the Jewish people.
Yeah, they're great people. They love me, the Jews. Yeah. It's like the blacks.
They make a great deal. They make a great deal, the Jews.
Every single freaking one. I'm going to win them all.
But I don't know. It's just an interesting observation.
This whole thing is screwed.
We can't know, but it's going to be Iowa is going to mean a lot for the Democratic race. I don't think it's going to mean much for the Republican race.
No, I agree. And I'm not, I agree. Certainly it's not going to mean much to the Republican race. I think it's going to mean more to the Democratic race. And then I guess we'll have to see, you know, I think the big unknown of this on the Democratic side is, can Bernie Sanders connect with minority voters? And if he can, and there's nothing to say that he can't, he's run in Vermont, which is a different kind,
yep.
You know, it's a state where he hasn't had to before. So maybe he will. And if he does, then I think I definitely will believe he can become the nominee. It really, that's the question he needs to answer. To me, that's almost the most important question that any of them could answer on the Democratic side. Republican side, figuring out that mess is a whole...
That's going to go a long time. But let me just say, there's three things I think listeners should just keep an eye on in terms of Bernie Sanders and the African-American community in particular. And because, you know, we've been saying from day one that this is going to be the big issue for Bernie Sanders. Now, if he loses in Iowa, then I think he's got a much bigger problem.
It's much tougher. Then I think he's got to win in Nevada.
Right. And that's a big Latino population, and he has sort of the similar challenges. But there's three things that have struck me in the past been a week. About a week ago, the lawyer for an African-American man who was shot by a police officer, and his name escapes me at the moment. But this lawyer is also a state senator, and I can't even remember the state. Was it in South Carolina? Right, exactly. Sorry. And it was the guy who was stopped for basically a parking violation, Walter Scott, I think his name was. And
right.
He was just shot. He was just shot. And the lawyer for Walter Scott has endorsed Bernie Sanders after having had endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Interesting. Eric, I haven't heard of this. What was the reasoning?
I think it's just he thinks he's more in tune with these.
I'm going to have to go read that after this. That's interesting.
Eric Garner's daughter came out, I think, today and endorsed Bernie Sanders, said that she does not believe establishment Democrats when they say they want to reform criminal justice. And about an hour or two ago, I think it was, Michelle Alexander, the author of The New Jim Crow, and if people want to go back, I think we interviewed her back in 2012, it may have been, she, on her Facebook page, posted, like, I don't know how there can be this much support for Hillary Clinton based upon the record of the Clinton administration in the 90s in terms of
on the incarceration.
Yes.
And another thing is,
and she is,
you know,
let me just say this. She is one of the intellectual pillars of the Black Lives Matters movement. And
and on top of that, you've got in this state, you've had Nina Turner, who was a Clinton person, switched over. She was on Ed's show a lot, so she has a bit of a national profile. State senator here who ran for she ran for Secretary of State and was unable to win, but she switched over to Bernie from Hillary. I mean, if I were giving the Sanders people advice, because you want to stay to what your brand is and your brand, you know, I mean, I hate using that word, but you want to stay to what your message is. Let's use an actual political term and what you're running on. And he's running on the vast disparities and unfairness of our system. I really think, you know, that if he wants to make that connection with the African-American and Hispanic community, it should be on criminal justice. I think he should embrace that platform and run on that in as strong a manner as he's running on both economic inequality and campaign finance reform. I almost feel like criminal justice reform he should add as a third plank to that platform, and bring some of these figures we're talking about out constantly and talk about it constantly. And I think he might be able to really make more inroads if he were to do that.
I mean,
that and a nickel get you on the whatever,
exactly. But those are certainly things to keep an eye on. Cliff, as always, a pleasure. We will talk to you. Maybe I'll talk to you on Friday. Maybe we'll connect even before then, because of course we have this Iowa caucus on Monday night of next week. But until then, always a pleasure.
All right, my pleasure too. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, buddy. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Isabel Gillies, who very well may have another great movie selection for us. We'll be right back after this. Sure, ladies and gentlemen. I think our next guest probably, if I have my calculations correct, was probably also a big Cure fan. I happen to know that her favorite song is this.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, and those who are watching on the YouTube will notice that I'm like staring intently at my phone. What am I staring at, Isabel?
Two dogs on my lap. One is a puppy.
They look identical.
And one is Maud. I know. Well, they're the same kind of dog, but they're all in a big mush. I can't even move. Today, I went... I'm potty training this baby. His name is Duke.
Now, I got to say, both these dogs look like they're very old. They have gray hair.
No. That's because they're blue roan.
What?
That's their color.
Do you understand? Hold on for one second. I just got to tell you this, because I don't think that Kelly has been here, I think, when Isabel, when you... Oh, yeah. Oh, one time. Okay. But Kelly is such a huge fan of yours. And when you, everything you're saying about like potty training a puppy, because that's what she's doing right now. Like, and then when you say blue roan.
That's what Kelly's doing right now?
Yeah. I just got a puppy too. And I was excited for you to come on the show. And then you said that to Sam. And and now you have a kind of dog that I like. And it's just getting
worse. Like, she's like literally.
It's getting
I'm watching Kelly over there. And she's going, oh my God. Like she's going to have
it's
a heart attack.
It's really real.
Yeah, it is.
Let's bond, because can I just tell you what happened? So yesterday we had perfect. See, in New York City, people who don't live in New York City, you got to take them out, and you have to go down onto the street and back up and down and up and down and up. It takes forever. But yesterday we had this beautiful day. It was like play, crate, outside pee-pee, inside. Everything was great, no mistakes. And then today, two steps forward, one step back, I came home peeping the crate. Then I went to give him a bath, wash the crate while I was doing that. Whoops, got loose, peeping on the sofa. Now he's cold. He's only almost 5 months old. So I felt sorry for him in the crate because he was shaking. So now he's on my lap in a towel. But then the older one, Maud, wanted to snuggle too. So now I was like, well, I just have to sit here and wait for you guys to call. I couldn't do anything.
I got to say this, two steps forward, one step back is exactly what I've been going through with Michael for years on this program.
It feels like having a baby. It's worse.
Well, I have to say that mine is only 3 months, and she just this week finished her vaccinations and was allowed to go on walks, because before that she was attacking me and just it was violence. It was constant violence in the apartment because she's a border collie and she was just way too pent up with energy. So now that I've gotten to walk her, I mean, the potty training stuff is the least of my problems, but you're right. She'll do perfect, and then the next day it will be all over the place. Like, I mean, not literally, but it will be.
For a border collie.
Go ahead.
You have to maybe do agility training, because border collies are smart, but they need to move. They need to go get it. They need to come back. They need to go under, over. They want to herd you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to do some training stuff, but. There's going to have to be a trainer that comes to the apartment, and then there's going to be training classes. But she just couldn't go around other dogs because of Parvo mainly. Otherwise, I would have just been screw this.
Right, I know.
But
now you're breaking the wee-wee pad. I mean, it's so indeed.
Hey guys, this is great. All this dog talk is great, but...
Well, a lot of people have done this, Sam, and... might be interested.
Well, my kid's he's almost three. He's still pooping in his pants.
Yeah, well, at least there's a diaper. I'll tell you something. Oh, no, three, there's no diaper. No.
Yeah,
last night I was out at 3 a.m.
What?
And Duke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, is 3 too old for him to have a diaper?
I'm no expert, but No. Actually, no. Three's still cool to have a diaper. That's right. I'm getting. I can't
They're not
remember.
Saying anything at preschool about it. He's taking his own. He's taking pee-pees in the toilet, but he's not still taking the poops.
There's a range.
Doing the deuce.
Of, you know.
Yeah. This is great stuff.
Does he take it? Is it like a pull-up?
Is it a pull-up? No.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but not really.
Because you can get a diaper like a pull-up.
I know. I just, I'm not, you know, I don't get a say in any of this. When I open my mouth about it, it's just like I get shut down. Sheesh. If it was out to me, the kid would already have a job. So wait a second. How long have you had the Maud? I didn't know you even had a dog.
Maud is 3 years old.
What?
And then I got Duke last week. We got Duke. Has been here for, maybe almost 2 weeks now.
How do you do? I don't understand how people have two dogs in New York City. That's just crazy to me.
Well, they occupy each other as well.
I don't know.
Well, eventually that will happen, yeah.
It's like when you know that you're going to have a bologna sandwich or something like that, when you're like, I have a hunkering for a jelly donut. And you might, you're like, maybe it's not good for me to have it now, but I know I'm going to have one. You might as well just do it. Just have it, because you know you're going to. So that's how I was about the second dog. I was like, I really think I'm going to get a second dog. And then finally, I was like, I just might as well do it now. Because I've got three teenagers in the house, two dogs, whatever. Just do it now.
None of that made sense to me. None of that made sense to me. I've got three teenagers in the house now, so I might as well get a second dog. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, man, in for the penny, in for the pound.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, or you could just say like, maybe I'll wait a couple of years so that when I don't have any kids in the house, I'll get a second dog. Because how many dogs are you going to have to get when your kids leave? How many dogs are you going to have to get to fill that void?
Well,
you're
going to
end up getting like five dogs.
I'm already preparing for that. And let me tell you something. The 14-year-old, this might as well be 25. It's not that he's not, I'm not saying he's 14 going on 25 because it's just that you're like, they go.
Right.
And they're
so independent. I mean, yeah, Mila is already going to the supermarket by herself and she's only 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
And
you're like, okay, you know, they get lost or something, you know, we had this thing where all the cell phones shut down and everybody's cell phone went out of power and they had to do a complicated thing out in the city, and I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to be able to do it? And then suddenly,
of course,
they were home, and they were like, oh yeah, we did this, and this, and then switched the subway, and they just did it. I was like, oh, okay, you're people in the world. It's bizarre, because, you know, one minute you're talking about diapers, and then the next, whatever, it's such a big cliche, but it's true.
It is. It doesn't feel like a minute while you're in it. It feels a little bit longer than a minute.
No, when they're three, it feels like molasses that's chilled.
Kyle has IM'd me, wants to get in on the dog talk. He's got two mini dachshunds, and
who does?
Kyle, the guy who basically set up the whole show, our technical guru.
He's a dachshund man?
I mean, I have never contemplated him in that way. I've always perceived him as being more of a techie than a dachshund man. But I guess he is
You're a dachshund man?
I guess so. I mean, maybe we should do a spin-off podcast here. There has to be a dog talk.
We've got dachshunds, spaniels, and border collies.
No, what's this? Is this the theme song?
Oh, that's the music?
This is Who Let the Dogs Out, instrumental.
Spaniels and the dachshunds.
Now, so
oh, yeah,
Isabel.
Dogs are majority. Oh, my God. I'm losing it.
Isabel, now, okay.
I just lost it.
Now tell me something. All right. What are you doing, aside from the dog thing, or is that it? It's all about dogs for you.
No, man, I'm writing a book. I've got.
What's the book you're writing on? Can you tell us?
I can't tell. It's a secret because every time I tell it, nothing happens. So now it's just a secret.
What's the genre? Can you tell me the genre?
It's like manifesto memoir.
Manifesto. That's a little scary.
Yeah.
Are you? I mean.
No.
All right. It just seems a little bit.
No.
Dramatic.
It's not like the Communist Manifesto.
Whoa, so you're saying it's a neoliberal manifesto.
Oh, God. No, I watched the debate last night.
Oh, thoughts. Now, we know we should just tell everybody, I mean, to be fair, lay cards on the table. You're a huge Donald Trump supporter.
Oh God, I hate. You know, why do I even do it to myself? What? But why do I even bring it up? Because then
I'm joking. I'm joking. Of course you're not. Of course you're not.
Have you guys been talking about Bloomberg?
No. Well, maybe a little bit.
A little bit.
What do you think about
that? In
our
own way.
Well, I don't think he could win. I do think he could perhaps keep a Democrat from winning.
Oy.
Mm. Oh, he is right. So, really? What did you think of the debate last night?
Those people. It's just stunning to me. The kids watched for a little while, and they were sort of jaw-dropped. And they also, here's the other thing, and it sort of is, paints a picture. They are, you know, when they're talking to us, all those people, you're like, all right, you're just trying to scare us. And, I mean, it's scary, but they're really trying to frighten people. And then when you've got an 11 and 14-year-old, and they're like, ISIS, rah! And then they're like, oh, my God. I was like, okay, all right. You can really see how they're trying to put fear into everybody.
Like it, because it, the 14-year-old is much more susceptible to getting afraid of ISIS.
Yeah, well, the 11-year-old was like, when Rubio was talking, was like, oh my God. And I was like, no, I was like, this is not the person to listen to on this subject.
you had to explain to him that the apocalypse was not happening?
Right. No, but it makes it clear. I'm like, oh. There are people that have the 11-year-old mind that are just going to be frightened and then vote out of fear. I hate it.
And did you miss Trump on the stage?
No.
What?
But I was sort of surprised at how little they... What?
No, you're surprised at what? How little what?
How little it sort of made a difference, actually.
Yes. Yes, exactly. They,
right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, without Trump there, you could all of a sudden see, like, these guys are like the B team. This is not, you know, we were told, like, these Republicans have a deep, deep bench. And then it was supposedly, like, you know, they're all being overshadowed by Trump. And then all of a sudden, like, now they're out from his shadow. And I thought they even looked diminished without Trump on the stage. Isabel? Are you okay? She hung up. She refused to even entertain that thought. Isabel is such a strong Rubio fan that she wouldn't even hear something like that. All right, let's try her back here. You can keep the ringer up. I hope she wasn't attacked by her dogs. Is that possible? Is it possible that her dogs attacked her and have...
What happened?
I don't know. Were you attacked by your dogs?
That's like saying, were you attacked by two warm plum puddings?
I've never been attacked by two warm plum puddings. That actually sounds like it could be fun. So Isabel, you've been writing a book that you can't tell us about, some type of a secret manifesto.
I've been writing a book... And dealing with I don't know. I feel like there's something else, lots of stuff going on. But
you seem like you're like medicated.
January.
Today. Are you medicated?
I quit drinking for January.
Why?
Just because it was January, and I was like, oh, everyone's not drinking for January, so I won't either.
Wait, does that happen? I didn't know that. Are you supposed to not drink?
People say you're not supposed to drink in January. And I was like, all right, I'll do that.
I never ever heard that at all. Nobody told me.
Of course. Really?
Wow. Michael, is this something you've heard?
It's an official thing.
I've done it.
Yeah.
Kelly, you know what I'm saying. We're the same.
I do. We are. Yes. Correct.
I never heard this at all.
So excited.
I've actually doubled down. During the blizzard, I was like stuck with two kids in the house.
Oh, my God, the blizzard.
Yeah, how could we not?
The blizzard was awesome.
Have you been in, now you've been in New York your entire life. Have you ever seen more snow than that?
Well, you know, on my 12th birthday, which was 1982, and I don't know if this is on record, there was such a huge blizzard. It was my birthday, and we were going to see Let's Spend the Night Together, the Rolling Stones movie, on the 86th Street and Lexington. And so I lived on the west side. Lexington is on the east side. And we were going to go to like a 6 o'clock show. And but it was such a big blizzard that all the MTA went down. And my dad said, well, let's walk across the park. And it was like one of those magical things. My friends and I walked during the blizzard to Let's Spend the Night Together. Oh, so awesome.
Wow.
So that was the last time I remember that kind of snow. And I know that this was the second largest, so it might have been that was the first one. But and then there was another time in the 90s that there was a huge blizzard when
I was working at
Kim's Video.
I remember that blizzard. That was quite something. I mean, there was something about this one that seemed not quite as dramatic. And I think it's because the snow came so quickly. Usually when you get this type of snowfall, it's over the course of like 2 or 3 days. It's much harder, I think, for the city to deal with.
Well, also it was a Saturday.
And
so
it was a weekend.
It didn't disrupt.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Yep. And that
it was right from 4 a.m. until like 9 p.m.
Yep.
And then you could let the kids out in the streets because there was no...
Yep.
It was really sort of magical, I thought. And I mean, the city did pretty well,
yep.
I think.
Your boy de Blasio did
all
right. All right.
He did pretty good, right?
Yes. So Isabel, I've got a good one this time. Okay.
And as we all know, we lost some big ones this month.
It's true.
Bowie, Glenn Frey,
Abe Vigoda.
And my favorite actor of all time.
Abe Vigoda.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman, that's right. He was your favorite actor of all time?
Is my favorite. Heartthrob. I adored Alan Rickman, and I'll tell you my recommendation is for the
hold on
the
one second. Did you not ever see Fish? Did you not enjoy Fish or Barney Miller?
What?
Wait, Abe Vigoda.
Are you gonna go Abe Vigoda on me?
All right. Sorry. You fine? You wanna?
I mean, God bless him and rest in peace. But no, I'm not going there.
Okay.
That's not the road I'm going down.
All right. Well, Rickman had it a little bit easier because he could do just a film. He just shows up. He says a word. The director can make it look good. Vigoda had to be on camera. I mean, for Fish, he had to carry the whole show. All right, go ahead.
Well, oh, my. You don't have to take someone else down.
I'm not taking anybody down.
Put
I mean, just, let's face it. I mean, there's a little bit more, you know. A little more talent involved when you're working in an ensemble like Barney Miller, and it's live in front of an audience, or maybe you're working for Fish, you're carrying a whole show, then, you know, an occasional, you know, the yippee-yay, you're
in
going
the Royal
down.
Shakespeare Company, and I think he was in the Royal Shakespeare Company. But English people are better anyway, so that's all I have to say. But I was in love with him. From afar. B, he was Snape, which is not why I loved him, but he, if anybody's having a hard time knowing who he is, he's Snape in all the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, okay. Sorry, good.
Well, you must watch Harry Potter movies.
Now, Mila watched one, and she got so upset about the whole thing that he was an orphan that 2 years ago that she can't watch him now. She stopped reading the books. It's too sad for her.
You kind of got out of something there. I don't think you would enjoy
it. I know. I would have enjoyed it.
My kids. All right. What? No.
I would have enjoyed
it. Still listen.
Sure. All right. So he was snakeish.
Snape.
It's funny because he didn't look snakeish to me.
He was Snape, but he was also in Die Hard movies.
Yep.
And Yippee-i-yay. He was in Sense and Sensibility, which is one of my favorite all-time movies of all time, Ang Lee. And that is, if you haven't seen that is, you got to see it.
Okay.
But the movie that killed me and that I loved so much and saw over and over and over again and is one of the most romantic, most amusing, sort of marvelous movies of all time is called Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Truly, Madly, Deeply. I feel like I recognize
Juliet Stevenson.
Was this an independent film?
Independent film. I believe it was probably 1990 around then.
Uh-huh.
And it's about a when you say it, it's not. It's about a. I'm not even. Can I not say what it's about?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to do it justice. I'm just going to say, honestly, watch it, because Julie Stevenson is incredible in it, and Alan Rickman is incredible, and it's funny. It's got sort of that English with Melanie vibe, and just beautiful, impeccable acting, and Englishness, and tea, and love, and here it is, February, the best month of the whole year, with Valentine's Day, and it's a love movie. Oh, it's so good, and he was so good.
All right. You know, it's funny, because I just Googled it, and
it makes me swoon.
Somebody on Mashable said the best way to mourn Alan Rickman, watch Truly, Madly, Deeply. Apparently, it was a critically controversial response. Roger Ebert got it 3 out of 4 stars, though, apparently, it was released first as a BBC film. Did you know that?
I did not.
It was a TV
movie? I saw it in the theater maybe 10 times.
Wow. Now, when Isabel says that, folks, it is true.
It is true.
I remember back in the day, and I've said this many times when you've been on, but I would be like, what'd you do today? I went to see 3 movies. What?
I know. And I saw Brooklyn in the theater twice, and that's me in middle age. So when I was in my 20s,
it was crazy.
Fancy free.
Yeah.
I could sometimes just sit through Truly, Madly, Deeply, weep my eyes out, sigh, go get a jelly donut, and go right back.
You would go to like this, you'd be like going to the pharmacy and just duck into the movie theater for like 7 hours.
Yeah. Because what's better? What was better? And by the way, I was at film school, so it was okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly justified.
Not like I was screwing around.
Right. There you go. Truly,
yeah. And now, look, this is my favorite thing to do, is talk about movies.
Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Madly, Deeply.
I may very well watch that.
I highly, highly recommend that you do. And when you called and said, okay, it's your turn, I was like,
perfect.
There was no question in my mind.
Well, I thought it was 50-50 whether you would go with Vigoda or with Rickman on this. You went with Rickman. That's fine.
Oh, no, Alan Rickman.
All right.
Listen, I was in the kitchen making
The Godfather's not that big of a deal anyways in the movie. Go ahead.
And I heard on the radio that Alan Rickman died, and I sat down and cried.
Wow.
I just cried.
Now, to be fair, Isabel, all right, and I don't mean anything by this, but you crying is not necessarily a measure of an incident that may be dramatic in the world, right? I mean, to be fair.
I know. Well, I know. To be fair, you are correct. However, this, a lot of times, like, I didn't cry, and no disrespect, because love David Bowie, but I didn't cry when David Bowie died. I didn't cry when Glenn Frey died. I did learn Take It Easy on the guitar, or I tried to learn it on the guitar.
Fantastic.
You don't want me to sing it, do you?
No. Oh, you want to sing us out? That would be fine.
No. No, it's okay.
All right. Isabel Gillies.
Take it easy.
I knew you'd do
it. All right, now listen. Good luck to you, Kelly. I mean, we're in the trenches here.
Thank you.
PC
yes,
camp.
It really is.
Woo!
Isabel Gillies.
And everyone else. Do I get to come back in February? Can I do a doubler? Because I love February.
Sure. Of course. It's January right now. It's not a doubler. Oh, you'll be back in February.
Well,
believe me.
February.
You should come in, maybe. Okay. What you should do is, and then watch Kelly have like a heart attack.
I could bring the puppy.
Oh my God.
It would, she like literally a stroke. I'd have to hire somebody else because she wouldn't be able to do her job anymore. It'd be, she'd just like walk around as if she had just been, you know, it'd be like being struck by a meteor. You don't understand what's going on.
Can you tell me what's going to happen? Can you do a prediction? Is Trump going to get, what's it called, nominated?
Oh yeah, he very well may. But I don't think he's going to win in Iowa. I think he comes in maybe second in Iowa.
To
maybe,
who,
maybe
though?
Third.
To who?
You know, it really...
They're all so mean.
It's, well, they're all mean, but that goes a long way in a Republican primary, actually. So, You'd have to decide who's the meanest.
So mean. That Ted Cruz is viciously mean.
Oh, yeah. He's a horrible... I think he's a horrible person, is my guess. But
I've heard that.
But, you know, I don't want to judge. I don't like to judge.
And Christie seems nice mean, too.
Christie's a
How
horrible...
How vicious are you about playing
He's a horrible, horrible, scummy, horrible human being.
And
there will be no
that Bridgegate question.
You know what? Wait a second. No, he didn't. He dodged the question in the debate. Absolutely. But I guess I got news for you. He hasn't dodged the question yet.
He's going to go down.
He's going down. That I will make that prediction.
He's got to go down.
He's going down. He's going down.
That
I don't
was
know
a
that.
Sick
I don't know.
Thing
he'll be. He'll be. I don't know that he'll be breaking rocks on the chain game, but. He'll be able to get a job as a lobbyist
he's
after
so
this, but that's about
mean
it.
Mean about Planned Parenthood? He looks right in the camera and he's like, Planned Parenthood. Do you know how many lives Planned Parenthood saves? It's like they're not real. These people. Even at age almost 46, it astonishes me.
Well, they get worse as you get older too. I mean, not necessarily you're getting older is making them worse. It is just that with time, they are actually, they're fermenting.
Getting worse, yeah.
Isabel.
It's not, okay, we got to go.
Always
right.
A pleasure.
It's because I have two dogs on me, so I could sit here all day long.
I know. But,
and chat, which I'd like to.
You come in
can
next,
you put your,
next
everybody time. Put your hand up, though, and say, we will watch Truly Madly Deeply.
I'll watch Truly Madly Deeply. Everybody's
Thank
done
you.
It.
Thank you.
All right. Isabel Gillies, ladies
all
and gentlemen.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and go into the fun half. But do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Now, Jimmy wants, because Anthony Weiner's documentary is coming out, Jimmy wants us to reprise his Anthony Weiner song. What? Michael's mad. Michael's mad.
I'm livid.
Because you just think that, what, he's taking the easy way out? Or?
No. I don't think he's taking the easy way out.
Okay. All right, let's hear this song, and then we'll head into our fun half.
To Breitbart, 8 foot tall son of a bitch who busted a politician named Weiner for showing his Weiner. To Breitbart.
To Breitbart. Behave
yourself. Legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. I'm not in favor of that. Don't smoke. Stay off of drugs. And stay in school, kids. Yeah.
Twitter, your wiener.
Freaks and animals!
Bill Clinton got a Hummer, and that was okay.
Freaks.
From a big-titted woman at his desk, for God's sake.
Freaks.
Spitzer got himself a high-class hoe.
Freaks.
And they say JFK had Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
Maybe Wiener will win the next election. He Twittered out himself a nice big erection.
Freaks.
He can Twitter his Wiener.
Freaks.
Twitter his Wiener.
Freaks.
He can Twitter his Wiener. Why don't you Twitter your Wiener? Larry Craig tapped a toe because he used a wide stance.
Freaks.
Chrisley likes a lady with a penis in her pants.
Freaks.
David Vitter wore diapers with his prostitute.
Freaks.
And he still got reelected. Isn't that cute? Doesn't have the balls to legalize weed. He can Twitter his wiener.
Freaks.
And he can plant his seed. He can Twitter his wiener. Twitter his wiener. He can Twitter
and
Twitter his Twitter. Twitter his wiener.
Behave yourself.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. He can Twitter his wiener. By Jimmy Reefer Cake. That one really stands the test of time. All right, folks, have a great weekend. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with the fun half. We'll take your IMs. Got a couple more sound clips for you. Of course, Donald Trump mocked Jeb Bush at his rally last night. We got to play that. And then we also have our beanbag compilation, which we definitely got to get to. We'll take a quick break. Be right back. See you in the fun half.